You're listening to South Florida's Good News Station, WCNO Palm Springs.
This is God's plan for redemption, and it's good news.
All right, it's a new day, and I'm Rhett Palmer. Great to have you listening to our broadcast today. We have Anna Copeland. I met Anna a few years ago. It's spelled Ann, A-N-N-E, correct?
A-N-N-A, Anna.
A-N-N-A, Anna. And because I have somebody in my family, she's Anna, but she's from, she speaks Portuguese from Brazil, I think it is.
She's probably A-N-A.
Is she?
Yeah.
Okay.
That would be a Portuguese spelling.
Well, how are you?
I'm fabulous. How are you?
Okay.
You look great.
Well, thanks. And you do too. You just went through COVID.
I did, and so did you. We both had it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It has its lingering effects. It's been probably a year and a half for me, and I find that my taste, I'm having a hard time with my taste, but I found out that I just read the other day that large doses of zinc will help bring that back.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those, you know, so.
Yeah, exactly. Now, it's good to be alive. We're so grateful to live in such a great time with both vaccines, and now we have treatment, which is really wonderful.
Now, Anna Copeland is from where originally?
Well, that's a great question, because ministers are from wherever their community of faith resides. But I'm from the Midwest. I grew up in the Midwest.
Oh, yeah. That's where you were born?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Which state?
Nebraska.
Oh, I don't know. Have I been to Nebraska?
Nebraska,
I know I did
a lot
of my gospel recordings out in Indiana. It sure was flat.
Well, Nebraska has wonderful rolling hills. Nobody knows about that because the Platte River Valley is so flat going all the way to Denver. But the western hills covered with sunflowers, there's nothing quite that can beat the beauty of that. And we have a national forest in Nebraska, believe it or not.
Really? Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to. I had an RV a while back, but I managed to go up and down the East Coast a lot and went as far as Michigan, went up into Canada many, many, many times. I used to own a place up in Canada. But don't have it anymore, but I think maybe if I get older again, I don't know if that cycle will come around again. I don't like the idea of really spending the night in an RV, but it sure does open up. You don't have to worry about finding a room. That's what's nice about it.
That's exactly right. This is a beautiful country, and as you know, with all the people you interview, this country is made up of many countries. So
yes.
Maine is very different than New Mexico, and Louisiana is very different than Washington State.
Is.
So get yourself out west. It's a beautiful country out there.
Yeah, no. So okay. So I want to know, how does a little girl from the Midwest end up becoming a pastor of a church? You're the pastor of Community Church.
Mm-hmm.
What is their mission statement? What is the mission statement of Community Church?
Well, those are two different questions, so I'll start with the first one.
Okay.
The first one is, how does a girl from Nebraska end up becoming a pastor? And and the answer is the grace of God. Faith is a gift, and it's a gift that I've had since I was a small child. I grew up in a family of faith. Never missed a week of Sunday school or church. It was the center of our life, and it shaped and formed who I was. So I would have become a minister in a church right out of college, except that back in that day, being in the Midwest, I had never met a woman pastor or priest.
No, it's so rare.
It's actually, women have been ordained since 1857. Antoinette Brown.
1857.
1857, exactly. She was Methodist. Congregational first, and then became Methodist. And so there of course, had been decades of women ministers on the East Coast and the West, but it takes a little longer for things to get to the Midwest.
Okay. I can't be controversial about this because I don't know enough to talk about it, so I'm opening myself up. But I can understand where, you know, they say there's a certain, God has a law of the man having the responsibility of shouldering the final decisions in a household. And when men put themselves under the authority of a woman, it doesn't seem like a natural thing. So what do you say about that? Because some sects don't believe women should be ministers. So, and you know, this is no new subject for you, I'm certain.
It's a great question. And one of the things that I would say to start with is that in the United Church of Christ, which is the denominational body of Community Church, we are radically inclusive and embracing of not only our ecumenical brothers and sisters, but also our interfaith alliances. So while we may talk today about things with whom we may disagree with other churches in town or with other bodies of faith, it's with the deepest mutual respect for the importance of all of our communities. So that's an important thing to say first. The second thing to say is that our understanding of priesthood for women has to do with our difference in interpretation and translation of Scripture. In the early church, there are those who read the translation very literally, and we look at the context in which it was written, to whom was it written, why, what was the purpose, at what time.
And you should judge Scripture by Scripture, I think it's written, right?
So part of the translation issue, I'll give you just two quick examples.
Okay.
Part of the translation issue is that, and a place in the New Testament where a deacon of the church, if it has a feminine pronoun in front of it, is translated old woman. And if it has a masculine pronoun in front of it, it's translated man, male. So it's a translation issue that makes it look like, that women weren't in leadership. The church at Philippi, you read Philippians in the Bible, the leaders of that church were two women, Euodia and Syntyche. So really the only way that you can exclude women from leadership is to be selective in your reading. When Paul talked about women not teaching, it's because in the early church, Jesus' time, women weren't taught. So if you're not trained, you shouldn't be teaching other people. You shouldn't be teaching men because you haven't been trained.
Why did they withhold the teaching of trained women?
I think that's a question that you'll need to ask the rabbi, because that precedes the Christian story that has to do with the Jewish history. And I think I might do it just injustice if I tried to answer it on their behalf.
Have you been to the Wailing Wall?
Oh, yes.
Okay. And there they still separate the women from the men.
They do. And there are, of course, Christian sects in the United States that still separate women
now,
from men.
Now, I can understand, too, because we've seen a lot of pastors. I don't know about any females, but I certainly know about male pastors. And I know one family, a friend of mine, that they moved to California, had three beautiful children. They went to see a counselor. The counselor ends up seducing the wife and ended that. And there, still the ramifications 45 years later. So, I guess, what was I trying to get through with that?
I'm not sure, but I will say that it's been decades now that more than half of the seminarians in mainline churches are women.
Yeah.
And
would you be alone if I needed counseling? Would you counsel me alone? Should you do that as a solitary female? And because if I was a pastor, I would not counsel a woman on my own. Not in today's world.
I do counsel both men and women on my own, but we do it during office hours when there are other people nearby. And we have windows in our office for security. I don't see somebody after hours or alone in a building, which makes common sense. I wouldn't do it if I were a lawyer or a university professor or anyone else, out of protection for my own integrity and the integrity of the person I'm working with.
Yeah, it's too bad we're such an age. I don't know. We didn't have a lot of these things happen when I was a kid, but I do not have grandchildren. I would like to have grandchildren. I was just telling Bonnie that I actually had an adopted grandpop. But the only problem is I will not be alone with a child that's not in my family, alone. And without another adult being present.
Our churches have safe church policies, so you wouldn't, if you were volunteering in a church, for most of the churches, you would have a background check before you were able to work with kids, and you wouldn't be alone. It's a two adult per child rule. You can't take a child home from an event and have that child alone in the car. So there are many protections in place, and it varies church by church, of course, but we have a safe church policy that is really, really firm to protect children, but also to protect adults from false accusations. Things can happen on both sides of that. Mm-hmm. Something that you think is a clear boundary might not be for a child or for, as you said, for a woman, or in my case, for a man. So we've just created those boundaries so that we have great respect for one another.
I just found out that there's a school in town here run by a church. I won't mention the church. I don't know if this is true or not. It was told to me by an older woman, but she said that the man that was in charge at the school at the time of this church kicked out a little girl, I think it was, because the mother was making her living. I don't know if she was a pole dancer or a prostitute. Do you think, would you ever make a child? I mean, there's the opportunity to minister to the child, maybe win the child to Christ, and the child might win the mother to Christ. Are we supposed to judge, or shouldn't we love?
The great under question to that question is that there's so much now on the internet, social media, public broadcasting, news stations, that it's very hard to respond to any particular story because We're getting a snapshot of what's true and not knowing the full story. So while I can't speak to that particular situation, I can say that we are inclusive of all who come through the door and do everything we can to minister and care for all of our families. You asked me a few minutes ago the mission of our church. It's a great question because we've been asking a question that we ask all of our seminarians when they're ready to be ordained. Number one, what is the purpose of the church? Capital C, all of our churches, which is to inspire and equip people to be followers of the way of Jesus. And then each of our churches in this community have a particularity, a purpose of what God, why God is putting us here now for this time and place. And for us at Community Church, it's that we are Christians who question. And when we say everyone's welcome, all means all.
Mm-hmm.
So those are two particularities of why someone might moving to town want to come to Community Church. To be Christians who question means that we equip people through biblical study and conversation and practices of prayer, all of that, to be able to discern God's lead in their life, but we don't tell them what that looks like. So we don't tell someone how to vote, what candidate to vote for, how they should respond to a particular issue. We equip people to be thinking people of faith. We believe you don't leave your brains at the door. And then when we say all means all,
It says in the Bible, let no one lord it over God's inheritance. Every single person is God's inheritance. You can suggest things, but guess what? You do what you let rings true with you.
You have to live your own faith
just
and
like
conscience.
Now you're a woman. I happen to be more intuitive than most men, but I think. But anyway, they can tell you this is a good person to be with. But if your intuition is saying no, I mean, even the scriptures say that only a fool does not confer with his wife, because women do tend to have another sense. Like if you were to leave here and I found out that you said, I get a check in my spirit about him, then I'd want to go, uh-oh. Because when I used to travel and sing in churches, I always asked the pastor, they were generally maybe all of them were males, and I said, what does your wife think of me? Because hanging out for a couple of days, because if the wife had a check in her spirit, I would want to know, because then I go, I better take and examine myself. Because generally, I've had cases in my life where, like Barbara, my wife will say, don't do business with this one. And I do, and I end up regretting it. Do you experience this? Are you an intuitive?
I am, but one of the things I would say is that that's not a function of being female. I think we're differently gifted by God. So the key that you've just described is that when we have a partner, we have different gifts, and to be able to honor, respect, and act on those gifts, whatever our partner always has something that helps us to be more fully human and to be live our best life.
It can be common sense, too.
Right. So you might have that intuitive sense, and maybe you might be married to someone who doesn't. So I wouldn't say that's so much a function of gender as being sensitive to recognizing the different gifts that God has bestowed.
Now, you can also be intuitive, as I am, but not have much common sense. Because I think when I had my heart hurt when I was younger, the number one thing I missed by not having someone who had a strong relationship with, a female, would be that I don't have that person looking out for me now, because I'm just, I'm just like a friendly dog. There's nobody I meet that I don't like. And you got to be careful about trusting people. I'm just hook, line, and sinker.
One of the gifts of being part of a community of faith is that we always have someone who has our back. So whether you're married, single, gay, straight, widowed, divorced, they are family to you. They will stand by you. And no greater love has anyone than this, but to lay down their life for their friends. And who are our friends? All God's people are our friends. So when you're part of a community of faith, that's one of the reasons I think that people are now returning to church and leaning in, because this world is so lonely and alienated. We don't know who we can trust. We don't know what we can trust. We don't know what's true.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're in a community of faith, we're not Democrat, Republican, or independent. We're followers of the way of Christ, who is the way, the truth, and the life. And that's a truth that's timeless and eternal that we can count on. And we can always count on that whether we're sick or well or struggling or suffering or grieving, there is a community that will come up underneath us and stand by us, even if we don't have anything else in common. We're in the world. We don't do the same things on the weekend, but we are mutually committed to one another as brothers and sisters in faith.
I see things in people. This may sound unusual, but I can sometimes, if I observe, like I'm observing you now, I can see their child. Now, you might say I'm wrong about this, but with you, when I look at you, I can see that I bet you were a very precocious young lady, probably more mature, wiser than her years early on. Would you agree?
Yes.
Yes. I got you pegged. I see that. And I know what I wonder about is how do you go through? So you're an academic.
Yes.
You are an academic. Yeah. You love learning. And I used to be anti-academic because I was a hippie in the 60s mm-hmm. until later on in life. Barbara has a son who's a doctorate of archaeology. And when he first became a professor, I remember walking into his offices where he teaches and singing, wow, he really did this academia thing. And I've always been the opposite and a rebel. And I said, this really paid off well for him. He did what he was supposed to do, went through the paces. I've always been the artist that paints over the lines and stuff. But since then, I went back to college. And I went to Indian River State College last year, maybe it's since I saw you. And I was on the dean's list for 2 months. And I only have an eighth grade education.
So look at what you're saying there. So it's true for me. I'm not so much an academic as a scholar, but I'm also an artist.
Okay, differentiate a scholar and an academic.
I'm not connected to the academic world in higher education. I've never taught at I have taught as adjunct professor, but I didn't choose to be a professor. But to be able to faithfully preach and teach, I have to be able to be a scholar who continues to dig deep and learn more. Our history, our theology, history, biblical studies, humanity, psychology, it's layers more, and there's always more to learn our whole life long so that we can effectively show up to one another. Yeah. So scholarship isn't, I don't live in my head. I live in our relationship, Brett, because the most important thing isn't what I'm thinking, but it's how we love and care for one another.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what Jesus said, because he said many are going to come to him on that day and say, hey, we did signs and wonders in your name. We made demons go away in your name. And he's going to say, depart from me. I never knew you. And to others, he's gonna say, you fed me when I was hungry, clothed me when I was naked, and visited me in prison. And you know, I can hear this guy saying, he says, when did we know you? I don't remember you, Jesus. And he says, well, when you did it to the least of these, my brethren, you did it unto me. Mm-hmm. So there, the heart thing is far above what even the Bible says. The letter of the law causes death. The spirit of the law gives life.
It's how we love and care for one another, which
is... And Paul says that, right?
Putting love in action, yes. Putting our love in action.
Okay. So I had so many things I was going to ask you.
I know. It's so exciting. It's really exciting.
Artist. Mm-hmm. You're an artist.
Yes.
Tell me about that. What kind of artwork do you do?
I'm a poet and a photographer. I've studied music all my life. I am not a musician in the church, but I fully support... Our church is known for music and the arts. We have an art gallery in the church, the Viner Gallery, and we also have, of course, we host the Indian River Symphony. We have the Treasure Coast Symphony. We have a number of, we're known for our music as a place where musicians can gather.
You have that big famous organ.
We have a big famous organ.
Tell them about that. That thing is huge.
It's gorgeous. We have folks coming from the Lincoln Center in the next year. We're expanding what we're offering in that kind of way. But we also do Bluegrass Sunday on the second Sunday of, so all kinds of music. One of our two worship services, you know, has the band, and it's very relaxed and welcoming. And then the other service is, you know, you can feel the resonance of the organ in your chest when you're sitting in the pews. And so I love that. I'm fed by music. So I think when you're fed by music and the arts, you want to go to a place of worship that aligns with that value.
Meaning?
Well, we're all fed in different ways, right, spiritually. And so it would be difficult for me to live in a place that didn't have wilderness and external beauty because that feeds me. It would be difficult for me to worship in a context that didn't have extraordinary music and the arts.
Who's the famous lady? I went to her museum. It's the only museum dedicated to a female artist in the United States of America in Santa Fe. She lived in Lake George, New York, where I used to run.
George O'Keefe.
Yes. What I don't understand has what you just said about, you know, the way you said that and the Adobe. So everything's Adobe. Have you been there, by the way?
Of course.
Oh, you have. Okay. So I'm really shocked because I love Lake George. I used to have my boat on Lake George. I handled advertising in Saratoga and Lake George and Albany. And so I love that area. I went down to visit my niece and nephew, who had a bead shop down in Santa Fe. And, you know, it's okay, the adobe homes. I'm thinking, why did Georgia O'Keeffe trade that cascading green mountains for this arid, dry? She obviously found a beauty that I didn't see. I'm an artist now. I started just doing art a few years ago. And there was a gal,
what kind of art?
Carol DeGroote Mann, who taught me, well, that was oils. Mm-hmm. But then now I've gone to, I have an app on my phone, and all of a sudden people have started to buy my art. It's crazy. But anyway, but what happens, like I'm looking at you now. Now she's got Dr. Anna Copeland, who we're talking with from Community Church. She has blonde hair. So there's a light above you that we use because we do videotape, but the light is hitting it just right. It's going down the one side of your head, on your face, behind these glasses that you have on one side of your face, and then shining on her coral sweater. Well, all of a sudden, you know, I'm seeing the light because it's when you're painting, it's all about the light. Mm-hmm. I just like light. You know, mm-hmm. you'll see a Florida scene and go, wow, how did they catch that light on that dirt road?
Or the water.
Yeah, the sparkling in the water. Suddenly you go, there really are diamonds on the water. Right. So you go from life, then you duplicate it in art, which opens you up to really seeing more of life.
So really what you're doing is we are created in the image of God. So all art is a way to express the divine, whether we know it or not. Because when we're trying to express the holy or the divine, words are inadequate. So that's one of the reasons that music and the arts is so important, is that the language of the universe is music. It's creative. It's part of the chaos out of which all things were born. So we're really trying to create, imago Dei, an image of what God has created, whether it's through oil paint or watercolor or music. And that's why it's so inspiring, because it goes to a place beyond words. We can look at a painting and be deeply moved, and we're not even sure why.
Now you just quoted something in a love language. I have friends that quote French sayings, and you realize we don't have necessarily a saying or a word for everything. Like I could show you one of my paintings, and it might suggest something, and we can't really put it into words.
At least not in English. Another language might have 10 words for it, but
exactly.
We don't have one.
Now, but I do want to know this about the sincerity of this. Now, I tend, you know, I'm very musical. I'm very emotional with music. Okay, so I walk into church on Sunday, and I'm carrying the weight of the world. Suddenly, there's some tender songs, and all of a sudden, my heart becomes broken and contrite. And then I will feel maybe the presence of the Holy Spirit come on me. And it's like, yeah, surrender the things of this world. Now you're in the sanctuary of the Lord's sanctuary and be here. I'm sorry that I acted that way on Wednesday afternoon or whatever it might be, and get forgiveness. Okay, so that's an emotional experience. Am I deceiving myself? So sometimes I'm saying to God, I said, God, do I really love you? Or is that just the moment, like I'll be driving in my car and, you know, maybe some tears coming down my face and I love you and this. And then I go, but if you turn off the music, Rhett, would you be as emotional? Most times, probably not. You know,
well,
so
what,
am I insincere because that emotes me?
Here's the good news. Your forgiveness doesn't depend on whether you're emotional or not. So whether or not it has come to mind in an emotional moment, you are forgiven for what you did on Wednesday because you're a beloved child of God.
Hard for us to get that concept.
It is. So it's a gift from God when our heart breaks open in that way, because then we get to experience what it feels like to be forgiven, but we're forgiven whether we're feeling it or not. And that's called grace. That's the unconditional love and mercy of God.
It frees you. For instance, I can remember years later, I got to interview Dr. Billy Graham. But years before that, I don't even know if I knew Christ at the time. I remember listening to him on a radio. I don't know if it was a Sunday or what day. It doesn't really matter. And, you know, come forward now and see what the Lord has for you, and you can be forgiven. For some reason, you know how you listen to things and you can hear them, but you don't really hear them? This time I heard. It was like, oh, I get it. You know, it's just like totally exonerated no matter what you've done. Whatever you've done controversial, whatever who you've slept with, who you haven't slept with, what you've done, what you've omission, commission, everything in life, there is forgiveness at the cross. And suddenly you realize that burden you've been carrying around can absolutely be forgiven if you sincerely repented. I guess if there is any qualification that would be repentance. But and so you can have a new beginning. And that changes lives. If I think ill of myself, you know, I remember last year I had a lady walking by here and she didn't smile at me. And I said, why didn't she smile? She looked like she was of lower economics means, and she didn't smile at me. And I'm into this dignity thing. And I said, oh, she doesn't think she has dignity, so she doesn't give out dignity. In other words, you've got to have dignity, self-dignity, in order to give away dignity. Now, if I don't think much of myself, I'm not going to smile at you. I don't have anything to give you. But if I think I have dignity to give you, even I don't care if you have a don't have a penny in your pocket, you have the power. You know, and you've had this happen at your church. I know you have rich and poor people at your church. Some rich guy walks in. You don't know. He might have a. I had a friend of mine just sold a business for $1 billion. He said, well, and I asked him how much he got him, hundreds of millions of dollars. And I said, oh, I was kind of sitting there going, oh, brother, you know. And he goes, well, Red, if it's any consolation, he says, I got very depressed that day. I chewed on that for months. He got depressed because he had relationship with secretaries and workers and salespeople around the world, and hundreds of people working for him. Suddenly he sells the business. Great, I got $1 billion. Look at that number. Where are all my friends? I'm no longer going to go into that office anymore. I gave it all away. So
when people are preparing for retirement, the question is always, what will you do the day you go from who's who to who's that? Yeah. And we have to be prepared for whatever that future may bring. When we're talking about we're talking about forgiveness, the challenge isn't because I heard you say in your head that you know that you're forgiven and you had that experience.
Yeah.
But most of us have trouble forgiving ourselves.
Yes.
So Father Thomas Keating, who was a Benedictine monk out of Snowmass Monastery in Colorado, said if we harbor guilt for more than 90 seconds, we sin. Because that means we don't trust that God means it when God says we're forgiven. So that much of the work of the church is really helping people to allow themselves to receive the grace of God, to receive forgiveness, to know their beloved, and then to let go of their attachment to that guilt.
You're a theologian, so you probably know this. I hope you do. Who was the guy that was walking around on his head and then finally had the epiphany that it's by grace? Was it Martin Luther? Or who was the guy? Was it the guy who started not the Unity Church?
Martin Luther founded the Lutheran Church.
What's the church that's up here on A1A as you go, you take a left, Christ by the Sea?
Methodist.
I think maybe it was that guy. Who was that guy that started
Wesley.
That? I think it may have been him.
Wesley's.
But the guy's walking around on his head and doing all these things and slapping himself with chains. And finally,
I don't know that part of the story. So
comes to the revelation that it's not by works;
yeah.
It's the free gift. It's very hard because Paul says in Ephesians, he says, you know, if you can earn your way to heaven, then Christ died in vain. Mm-hmm. And what a horrible thing to even suggest.
So one of the things that I really love about Community Church and the United Church of Christ is that it's a place to come to experience abundant joy and abundant life. So there's no beating one another up with chains or beating ourselves up with chains or talking about all how wretched we are. We know. We all know how wretched. We all know the things.
We do, though.
We say a prayer of confession. We pray prayers of confession. We hear the words that we're absolved and forgiven, of course. But it's very difficult. Sometimes we feel like if there's suffering anywhere in the world, we're not supposed to have joy. And there will always be suffering in the world. There will always be wars and rumors of wars. There will always be corrupt governments. There will always be challenges around us that are difficult. There always have been. But God intends for us to have abundant life and abundant joy. So how do we love one another and attend to the suffering of the world by our actions and yet be able to lean into the abundant life and joy that this life is supposed to be? You know, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, not in the sweet by and by alone, but right now.
I'm working on a book. I bet you like the cover. I mean, the title. And that is, We Only Grow in the Valleys. Mm-hmm. So you said that most of us know, but I'm not so sure because, okay. So I remember one time somebody had done something illegal in this town, and I was at a car wash, wait around in the car wash, you know, and they have coffee or whatever, but anybody's in there. And all of a sudden, they're all lashing out about this guy, an attorney who'd done something wrong. Let's beat him up. Let's tear his eyes. Let's tear him asunder. We've seen this in history. Quarter a person? Mm-hmm. They put a horse on each arm and a horse on each leg and tear them apart in front. Anyway, I was thinking, wow, you all are such holy people. You know, I remember watching a movie about this Polish guy, It's a documentary. And they also made a regular film. Jack Black plays in it, the actual movie. But the first movie I saw was a documentary, which I liked a lot better. But it's a true story about a guy who came from Poland. He started an oom-pah-pah band, and it became famous. But he's got 20 people on stage. He's not making enough to pay everybody. So he gets all these rich followers to start giving him money. I'll give you $20,000. I'll give you back 12% within 5 years. Well, inadvertently, he started a Ponzi scheme. Okay. So as the movie starts out, he's in a hotel room. He says, well, I'm going to go into court today. I'm probably going to go to jail. He said, but I did not start this, you know, to do this. It's what just happened. Okay. So, and he did go to jail. Well, he's in jail, and the guy, a guy and his roommate ends up stabbing him, I don't know, 32 times. He lives. Okay, so he didn't die. So then later on in the movie, they show a lady on a couch, an old lady, and said, yeah, we gave him $20,000. I wish that that guy, his roommate, had finished the job and killed him. And instantaneously, I said, you are more of a sinner than that man. He made a mistake. He's spent it. He's paying for it. It's not right. And I know you lost $20,000. But for you to wish your fellow human being had been stabbed to death, you just became a greater sinner than his sin. That's what I felt.
So the great news is, you know, we've been preaching in a series first on what it means, friendship, then what it means to love our neighbor. This week on what it means to bear one another's burdens, bear with one another's burdens. So when we come to church, right, you're exactly right. We don't always know right away what it is that we're doing. But, you know, one of the examples we gave recently, and one of the reasons that I keep saying, you know, I'm not to the left, I'm not to the right, I'm with Jesus, is that the same tactics can be used by all sides. So one of the things about being a radically inclusive church is that that means to treat the person who is most different from me, politically, theologically, in every possible way.
You take a lot of heat for that,
I'm sure. With the same dignity and respect.
Yes.
And I'm not at liberty to watch the news in the morning and say, oh, those people, blah, 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 and judge my neighbor. That's not my job. So I have a close family friend who was posting something really negative about the other political party online. And we grew up in the same neighborhood. And I wrote to them and I said, you know, it doesn't matter who you were vilifying online, what candidate it was, what political person. That's not how we grew up. We grew up with anything you say about someone else comes back on you. We don't talk about somebody else in a negative way. That's disrespectful. And that's not how we were raised. And that's not what it means to be Christian. So this is
because Martin Luther King said, hate doesn't overcome hate, love overcomes hate.
Love overcomes. So this is a time in history. There's never been a time in my lifetime when the church has been more important to bring us back to what it means to be a person of dignity and respect, loved into being at the beginning by an all-loving God, living under a grace of forgiveness, who also extends that grace, respect, and mercy to everyone in our sphere. Whether we agree with them or not is irrelevant.
Yeah.
God doesn't ask our opinion on who's in or out. God doesn't ask our opinion.
Every human being is God's inheritance, not ours.
That's exactly right. God made every creature on the planet. And so that makes us responsible for whatever is in our sphere, whether it's the manatees in the river that aren't getting enough to eat, or whether it's our neighbor down the street who may be completely on the different side of the universe from what we believe. How can I love and care for that neighbor? How am I willing to lay down my life for that person with whom I am so different? That's the test of faith for a time like this.
And that's a growing thing, because I've always loved people, period. But I remember I was in a 12-step program, and this character was like, well, sometimes I go to Walmart just to see the show. And I thought to myself, sir, you're part of the show.
We're all part of the show, Red.
He's the older guy with spiked purple hair, and he's telling them at their show.
Yeah.
So I pulled up to Walmart recently, and we talk as we're going along. Somebody may not be in this place. You may not be in this place, and maybe I'm out here all alone on this. But I pulled up to Walmart, and immediately I thought, instead of being, you know, and there are times I've gone there at night. Barbara doesn't like to go there at night. She's scared of it. And there are some characters, but it was like, so you can have a little fear, like, what am I going to run into here today? But as soon as I stepped out of my vehicle, I said, Lord, I said, who can I serve here today?
That is the best question you could ever ask, Rhett. If we could all ask that question, it would change the world.
It did.
Suddenly,
I felt so wonderful.
What a
great
question.
This wonderful feeling came over me. And immediately, of course, I thought, And maybe I'll do this someday, being a chaplain or something. I said, I'd love to wear one of those shirts with the collar, mm-hmm. because the moment that I do that, right now I represent Jesus, but if I put that on me, then it shouts to the world, I am an absolute servant of yours, and myself has to stay out of the way. At least that's what it means to me anyway. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, maybe someday I'd be a chaplain, put that on, because well, how great to walk around totally free going, you're first, you're first, I'm second. And it feels so good to be second.
There's more power in how you smile and greet one another than the collar, because for a whole bunch of folks who have been in a church where the collar represents abuse or misuse of power, that can also make them back up.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing between you and the love of that person and service of that person. So you can lean in and look around for who am I being, what path am I being placed in today? Where is God placing me today? Who is the opportunity for me to serve today? And it will be made clear. That's a prayer. When you pray, when you ask, who's here to that I can serve today or love today, that's your prayer.
Who I'd like you to meet? I'd like to meet my friend Jerry Lamoth. He was a Catholic priest until he was 40, and then ended up falling in love with a girl, just like, what was it, Rebecca and Isaiah? I mean, she was 20 years his junior. And, people were, did not live here then, but apparently it was very controversial. But once you're a Catholic priest, I understand you're a Catholic priest forever, but he obviously left the church, I think it was St. Helens, but he has 11 children now, and they're all delightfully wonderful. I mean, his wife and they brought up beautiful children. But I remember him teaching me some things. He counseled me for many years, and once in a while still does, if I find myself in a dark place, Jerry Lamoth. But like it used to be, if I saw and I had this happen since then, somebody sees a pedophile on the front page of the paper. Wow, let's stab him 1,000 times with knives. And now Jerry has switched me over to going, first thing I think is, wow, what made him behave that way?
Mm-hmm. Someone came into my office a couple of weeks ago, just torn up with anger toward a particular political figure every day, just like eating them up, judgment, anger, like, I hope somebody assassinates this person, and asked me what to do. And I said, okay, just a second, I opened the Bible, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. I said, go home for 10 days, pray for this person without ceasing, morning, noon, and night. Whoa. Every time they come to mind, every time you see their face on television, pray for them and come back and see me. Came back 10 days later, after 10 days, and said, he said, I don't agree with them any more than I did before, but I'm released from my anger, and I now have compassion for that person, because I now, God has revealed to me some of the circumstances of that person's life that have led them to behave in the way that they do.
Yeah.
So that's what our faith gives us, is release from judgment, release from anger, and compassion for those, even those with whom we vehemently disagree, even if we disagree for really good reasons, right? Nevertheless, they are beloved children of God, and we're here to have compassion toward them and to serve even them without judgment.
It's funny because, I remember Emerson said, we forge the chains that bind us, and that can be applicable to many things in life. But it's not us that, well, it's like that old saying, if you take two glasses of water and then you have a salt jar and you pour salt into the one, where salt represents the anger. So you pour that salt into one glass. That's you, and that's your unforgiveness and anger towards somebody. It doesn't affect the other glass of water whatsoever.
No.
It just affects you and eats you up, like this person. That's a great story. And that should go into a book.
Frederick Buechner, who's a famous pastor and teacher, said that, to paraphrase, anger is a wolf that snaps and eats and devours, but the morsel at the feast is you.
Yes.
Anger just
very
eats
well
us
said.
Up. Just, it's a wolf that eats us up, doesn't impact the other person one bit.
You know what helped me with anger? Knowing what I was taught, that anger is either hurt or fear talking. And really, if you narrow it down, okay, why am I angry right now? You're angry because you're scared. Oh, to be honest, I don't know, maybe females, I shouldn't say the male-female thing, but for me, like a guy, you're not supposed to be fearful. I went through the whole beginning of my life, don't show anybody any vulnerability, First time a girl hurt me, that was it. After that, I never let anybody get close, and it would work very well, because the more you don't let them, then they want to chase you, and then you go, stay away, and you build that wall, and you don't even know it's a wall until later on in life. You can go, why are you acting in this way?
Under the anger is sadness. Under the sadness is grief. Under the grief is fear.
And if we
can claim and own our grief, if we can claim and own our sadness, if we can claim and own our fear, we can be healed of the anger.
Yeah. I was with some guys last night for an old men's meeting, and talking about, you know, get out of that lane. That passing lane is my lane. And the guy actually said, he rolled down his window and shouted, this was in a church environment, so he yelled some obscenities to this guy. And then, you know, he says, you know, aren't you happy that that guy didn't hear you say that? And we were all laughing. So no matter how far progressed, sometimes we can take, you know, 10 steps forward and one step back, but you just keep on keeping on because we're all growing as human beings.
Well, you talked earlier about a priest is a priest for life, but a Christian is a Christian for life. So you're a Christian when you're in your car and what you say to the other guy, even if you don't think they hear you, right?
So God hears you.
Well, and it also, when we notice our behavior toward other people, when we think nobody's watching, that's an opportunity to say, oh, this is an unhealed place. This isn't a place that I've not yet experienced forgiven. This is a place I haven't yet let go. And it's going to continue to eat me up, and it's going to continue to damage my relationships with other people, even if it's hidden.
I want to ask you this. As a female scholar, and you have many, what are the degrees you, by the way, we're talking with Dr. Copeland. Dr. Copeland is the head...
Senior minister at Community Church of Vero Beach, United Church of Christ.
Yeah, big church. Okay, so I know you've taken some flack.
You know, for
maybe being a female and being a preacher or whatever it might be, you know.
I actually, that's an interesting thing. I actually haven't within my own tradition and within the mainline church. It's really...
No. People aren't going there anymore.
No, people aren't going there anymore. The only place I experience that, it's not from interfaith neighbors, it's from some ecumenical neighbors that don't accept the priesthood of women. Mm. So I don't experience flack so much as shunning is too strong of a word, but not reaching out on the part of some in the community.
We should all communicate.
I think there are those who think that community church is not a Christian church, and they think, well, one sign is that there's a woman senior minister. And one of the things now that I've only been now called a senior for just a few months that I look forward to is reaching out to some of my neighbors that don't ordain women, so that we can have a conversation and know and understand one another and understand that Christ is at work in all of our churches. There's nothing we can say or do that limits the movement of God's Holy Spirit in the world. But we can lean in and participate in that by the way we learn from and care for one another. And so that would be my hope for this community, is that we can, even if we don't understand how God is at work in exactly the same way, that we can have a relationship and a mutual respect and regard for one another.
I think one of the most controversial things going on now is this Roe versus Wade thing. What's her name, Martinelli, in here this morning, and she heads up Crisis Pregnancy Center. Mm-hmm. And they have this, what's the thing when you take pictures of a baby inside of a...
The sonogram?
Yeah, whatever, ultrasound.
Ultrasound.
And, you know, you can see a heart beating early on. So I know there's a lot of controversy about that. And, you know, where does a woman's rights begin and end? Is the child separate? I mean, if I had a child, and you saw me, let's say I had a 5-year-old, and I was really slapping that kid around, heaven forbid, I do not slap children or women or anybody else, not even men. I was in a fight once when I was a kid. I couldn't even hit the guy in the head. He was hitting me in the head. I couldn't hit him. So that's the kind of guy. I'm a peace guy. But let's say I was doing that. I hate to put that vision out there. But shouldn't that be illegal for me to abuse that child? Wouldn't you turn me in? Same thing as with all laws are based on a moral decision, right? So how do we handle this whole thing, you know, reconcile it? Because I'm pro-life, you know, and then we say, well, you know, what right does the government have to tell somebody what to do? But then we could say, well, what does any government have to say? You can only go 35 miles per hour here, mm-hmm. or that it's wrong to steal. Mm-hmm. Well, you say, well, he just feels like he should steal, and that's you know, it's my business. So where are you with all that?
That's such a great question. first of all, I'm not a politician. I'm a pastor and a priest.
Yeah.
And as a pastor and a priest and a follower of the way of Christ, Christ is pro-life, but the definition of pro-life is different. One of the things Jesus did is he didn't very often, only three times, actually answer a question people asked him. He helped people ask better questions. So what does pro-life mean? So when we think about pro-life, if we're pro-life and we bring children into the world by any means, then how do we support them in a nurturing environment all the way to adulthood? So pro-life would include a DNA test, a paternity test for who is the father of the unborn child, with an obligation to raise that child, pay for that child to the age of 18.
And also to be included in the decision whether to end that life or not.
Much of the legislation is around women, but not men. And so there's, and all of the conversations we're having around weapons in the country, I support the right to keep and bear arms. Nevertheless, when we're talking about issues like that, to be pro-life is to say, what are the actions we need to take to be able to protect children and families and neighborhoods from the misuse and abuse of weapons? So it's a much bigger question than abortion.
And let's say someone's committed a murder. Would you push the button to execute someone? I don't think I could, because as long as let's say you murdered somebody, as long as you're alive, there's the hope of you to repent and make well with your soul. If I kill you for killing somebody, so I wouldn't kill a child, and I wouldn't. I remember back in the 60s, though, and, you know, because I went to Woodstock. I was a hippy-dippy-doodle guy from
the
time.
Along with the rest of the country. Everybody was at Woodstock.
I was there. I got my tickets still. I'll show you sometime.
Keep that.
My food tickets. Yeah, I have. But what was I going to say there about, if I had had a girlfriend back then, and there was a lot of free love, and if somebody had become pregnant, I would have she's going to get an abortion, I would say, well, that's your business. But then at the age of 29, when the holiness of God entered me alone, thank God, not in a church, because otherwise I think that was the only church, you know. You know, it's just like people get saved with a blue shirt. Oh, everybody's got to wear a blue shirt. And if you don't have a blue shirt, you're going to hell. I mean, just humans, the tribalism that goes on, it's they want security. It's fear. We're all going to wear blue shirts. And, you know, they turned down Gandhi. Gandhi wanted to go to a church in India and said, well, you're not properly dressed. We're not letting you in here. Like you, I know already, if I ask you this question, if some stinky homeless person came in and sat down in your front row, would you ask them to leave?
They have come in, and they have stayed, of course.
Good.
In fact, someone came in without clothing at all. He was simply in his underwear and a pair of socks. And
what did you do?
I called my husband and said, bring me a complete set of clothes, including shoes that you don't want back. And so we gave him a place to clean up. We fed him. And
the guy?
We asked him what he wanted. He wanted prayer. And we prayed with him, and then we clothed him and fed him and sent him on his way. So the question you have about pro-life, really what I'm saying is, I think the bigger question is, what does it mean to be pro-life for the whole of our lives, for the whole of our lives, the sanctity of life at every stage? Because there are many people who are pro-life and pro-choice. Many people who are Christian are pro-life and pro-choice. Many people who are Christian are pro-life around the abortion issue. The bigger question is, what does it mean as a follower of the way of Christ to protect and act in such a way that every life is precious and grows up with safety and has the care and provision they need all the way to adulthood until they can support themselves and then be protected in the wider culture? And those bigger questions are the pro-life questions that we're not fully addressing at this time.
What's the song by Bette Miller? God is watching us. Remember that song?
We closed worship that way this last Sunday. God is watching us. Yeah.
It's a great song.
Not just from a distance, but right here, right now.
But I do believe, I mean, it says that every tear you cry is kept in a jar. I don't know if you've ever gone through a real tearful situation by the time, you're an adult. So
I keep a bowl in my office for tears. A lot of tears are shed in my office.
Yeah.
Of course.
And then he says he saves them all. So do you think that God, I do. See, some people go, oh, Rhett, you think God can get you a parking spot? I said, well, your God's too small to do that. I don't think we understand that it's written that eye hath not seen, nor ear heard, neither has entered the heart of man the things which God has for those, prepared for those who love him. This is, if you think this is phenomenal, just look at, we have 18,000 varieties of butterflies. I mean, it's just insane. Look at a little ladybug. Look at a horse. Look at a baby. Look at anything. Look at you. I'm dust looking at you right now and talking with my tongue. We're out of time. So she's Dr. Anna Copeland, And she's at the community church. What time are your services?
Well, Red, I'm saving a place for you on the pew. 10:15 on Sunday morning, either our contemporary service or in the sanctuary if you want the big organ sound. Got a place for you, or 8:30 in the morning if you like to get up early. So come on over. I've been saving a place for you ever since I met you.
Well, I was there. Did you Grace see me in God. The audience on that? You were, what do they call that?
When the installation.
The afternoon, the installation.
Yeah. God bless. Thank you. I was so glad you were there.
Thank you.
I always appreciate a conversation with you. Thank you for your time today.
God bless
you and keep you.
God bless you and keep you. Okay, this is Rhett Palmer, and it's a new day, if you want it to be.
Lord, you are my hiding place. Come now and cover me. You are my safety when storms are raging. Surrounding me with songs of deliverance. Come and surround me now. I hide myself in I hide myself in thee. Oh Lord, I hide myself in thee. I hide myself in thee.
God's word says, Thou, O Lord, art a shield about me. You're my glory. You are the lifter of my head. And he who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. He will cover you with his feathers, and under his wings you will find refuge. His faithfulness will be your shield and rampart. You will not fear the terror of night, nor the arrows that fly by day, for he will command his angels concerning you to guard you in all your ways. The Lord will watch over your coming and going, both now and forevermore. Isn't that good news? Oh, let's sing it.
I hide myself in thee.
Oh, yes, we do, Lord.
I hide myself in thee. I hide myself.
Heavens, you who first loved me, it is you, you, Yeshua, it is you, it is you, you, Yeshua, it is you, you who bled and suffered. Died to save me, you who gave me life.
striving these days? Why are what? You trying to earn grace? Why are you crying? Let me lift up your face. Just don't turn away. Why are you looking for love? Why are you still searching as if I'm not enough? To where will you go, child? Tell me, where will you run? To where will you run? 'Cause I'll be by your side wherever you fall in the dead of night. Whenever you call, then please don't fight. These hands that are holding you, my hands are holding you. Look at these hands.